All right, let's go ahead with Daniel 2. And so we read in verse 1, and in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. So this would have been his second year. So Daniel would have been in there about a year by now. So in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar, if you start in 606, this would be 608 B.C., then Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep broke from him. And the king commanded to call his magicians and the astrologers, the sorcerers, the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. They came and stood before the king. The king said unto them, I've dreamed a dream. My spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spoke the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we'll show the interpretation. The king said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servant the dream. We will show the interpretation of it. The king answered and said, I know of a certainty that you would gain the time. And that means you're just stalling because you see the thing is gone from me. So understand what the king is wanting. He had had this dream that had just impressed him. He was just completely obsessed with it, only he couldn't remember what it was, couldn't remember the first thing about it. And so he wanted them not only to tell him the interpretation, they had to tell him the dream too. In verse 9, if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know you can show me the interpretation. Now, that's a real test. He said, I don't want to tell you some dream, and then you'd say, yeah, this is the interpretation. But if you can tell me what my dream was in the first place, then I can certainly believe that you can tell me what the interpretation is. That's a pretty good line of thinking for the king, even though it is rather unreasonable, as they tell him here. Well, in verse 10, the Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king the matter. There's no man alive that can do this. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things as any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. It is a rare thing that the king requires, and there is none other that can show it before the king. Notice this, except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. Now, they did speak the truth here. They didn't know the God of heaven, but this is absolutely the truth because only God knows the secrets in the hearts of men. Only he could accomplish that. And these men acknowledged that, the God of heaven, even without knowing it. In verse 12, for this cause the king was angry and furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men in Babylon. It wasn't just those that were present there. Everyone in the king, everyone that was designated a wise man in the kingdom was to be destroyed. So in verse 13, the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. They were in this company of wise men that were supposed to be slain. Now, I want to notice again the type of man that Daniel had to deal with. This is the same fellow that gave the decree of the eating the king's meat and the wine, and Daniel had to deal with that. We find in our day some have had to deal with, they have encountered unreasonable men, but still you will notice that God is able to fulfill his purposes. I also want to notice the extent to which God will go to perform his mission and accomplish his purpose. The reason I say that is because this dream is from God. Therefore, it is because of God that he forgot it. God knew exactly what he was doing here. In verse 14, Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom. That's what sets this man apart, is that he really did have counsel, that is, of God in his word. And he had wisdom. He knew how to use that counsel. And so he answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone for to slay the wise men of Babylon. And he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? And the king made the thing known to Daniel. Well, Daniel went in, and you'll notice he desired of the king. He appealed now to the king. You remember that Daniel really has a spirit or an attitude of appeal rather than confrontation. And so he is appealing, making his appeal to the king. So he makes his appeal to the earthly king, and then we'll find out he will make his appeal to the heavenly king in verses 17 to 19. So he went in, and he desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. You will notice this doesn't read, perhaps I can show you. He really gives him the assurance, I will show you. Just give me some time and I will show you. That was a tremendous statement of faith on the part of Daniel. And I'm sure that he felt absolutely certain he could back it up. And he knew exactly what to do. Verse 17, Daniel went to his house. He made this thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, his companions. And these four were actually united in spirit. He knew whom he could trust. We do the same thing today when we are in certain difficulties and there are certain crises. You know who you can call on. You know who you have confidence in. Daniel did exactly that. And in verse 18, he knew exactly what to tell them, that they would desire mercies. Again, this reflects such an attitude on our part. This would be one of those principles of prayer that we have been seeing on Wednesday evening. And that is, you do not demand anything of God. We must not give in to such a thing as that at all. We rather desire mercies. It is according to the grace of God. It is according to what he would have in our lives. We appeal to that grace. So he would desire mercies of the God of heaven. And again, he's going out of the realm of this earth. This is the God of heaven we are dealing with. And it is concerning this secret. Did Daniel know Deuteronomy 28:29? It says this, the secret things belong unto the Lord. And so he is the master of these mysteries, and he still reveals them today. So Daniel went to the one who understood the mysteries. And so he went to the God of heaven concerning the secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. Now, his praise here was not simply for saving his life and that of his companions, but he was rejoicing for the revelation of truth, as we find here in verses 20 to 23. And we do exactly the same thing. We should be of that group that so enjoy and have such a burden and longing for truth that we rejoice in the truth that God reveals to our hearts, not just the fact that he delivers from death or some other calamity. In verse 21 we read, and he changes the times. This, as we're going to find out, is the essence of the dream that Daniel would interpret. God is just about to change the times. And Daniel knows that now. He changes the times because he knows that God is going to change the times from Gentile time or Jewish times to Gentile times. And he's going to give the Gentiles control of world government. So he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings, he sets up kings. He gives wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. And Daniel discovered it as we do, to him that hath shall more be given. God delights in that. When he sees those who are hungry and obsessed with truth, he will give them more every time. In verse 22, he reveals the deep secret things. He knows what's the darkness and the light dwelleth with him. He reveals the deep and secret things. Daniel knew that by experience. That's when we can speak it, is when we have experienced what God has done. Verse 23, I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto them, destroy not the wise men of Babylon, bring me before the king, and I'll show unto the king the interpretation. And Arioch brought in Daniel before the king, and you can underline it, in haste. And this man, I'm sure he was absolutely thrilled that he was bringing Daniel in as a live man. And he said thus unto them, I have found a man, and you can underline it again, of the captives of Judah. It would be saying, I have found a Jew. And one day, men are going to do exactly the same thing. They are going to actually lay hands on the Jew because they are so special and they know that. Isaiah tells us that. So, I found this man that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, magicians, soothsayers show unto the king. And here's where that Daniel wanted to make sure that this king understood that there was a great contrast between he and these other magicians and these workers of Satan, though he did not call them that. But he said, king, you must know that your wise men cannot accomplish what I am about to tell you. Verse 28, but there is a God in heaven that revealed secrets. Now you notice again that Daniel did not stand up and try to emphasize and show that he was so special and that he had such great gifts, and that he was just head and shoulders above all else. It is the God in heaven that revealed secrets. And this is the message that we must have for everyone around us. It is God who is in charge. It is God who is directing our path. And so it is the God in heaven that reveals secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar, and you can underline it again, what shall be in the latter days? And the reason I say underline that is because those latter days reach down to our day. Daniel knew that this vision went way, way beyond his present time. And he saw the accuracy of it and knew that it was a long time. And so these are the days that we are living in today. Nebuchadnezzar shows the beginning of Gentile times. And this vision shows things clear down to the very end of Gentile times, which entails thousands of years. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. Now I can only imagine that king as Daniel began to speak, and he began to wonder, am I going to recognize what this fellow is saying? And then to find the thrill that when Daniel began to describe this image in graphic detail, and those images came back to Nebuchadnezzar, yes, I did see that. That's exactly the image that I saw. I can only imagine the thrill in Nebuchadnezzar's heart, his mind, when that began to happen to him. And so thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. Verse 29. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And that's exactly what he means. Beginning in 606 BC, actually, everything thereafter, I say again, down to the present day in which we are living, this is what Daniel was describing to Nebuchadnezzar. And he that revealeth secrets makes known to thee. He is telling you, Nebuchadnezzar, through this vision and this interpretation, what shall come to pass. As for me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. So this is not me doing all of this. God is doing this for the purpose of revealing truth. Did you know the same thing is true today? God is revealing this truth not to exalt some man, but that others might understand the revelation and the vision of truth also. That's why he does it. And so that you might know the thoughts of thy heart. And verse 31 begins. Thou, O king, sawest and beheld a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. The word means dreadful, or fearful, or awesome. It was just something spectacular that Nebuchadnezzar originally saw in his dream, and now then Daniel has seen it in vision. This image's head was of fine gold. We'll give this interpretation as we go on, and we'll find out that Daniel corroborates that. So the image's head was of fine gold. That gold head is typical of Babylon, and specifically Nebuchadnezzar, as you'll find in verse 38. That is the Babylonish Empire. His breast and his arms of silver. This is the Medo-Persian Empire. His belly and his thighs are of brass. That is the Grecian Empire. Grecian Empire. His legs of iron, that means the east and the west, divisions of the Roman Empire. His feet, part of iron and part of clay, is the Roman Empire in the very end stages. Verse 34, thou sawest till that stone was cast out without hands. Here he tells him what you saw was a moving picture, like we would view a movie today. And so you saw till a stone was cut out without hands. That stone is Christ. And cut out without hands means that it was done in a way in which no man has control. No man has control over Christ or what he will or will not do, which smote the image upon his feet. Once again, his feet is representative of the latter end of this Roman Empire. And because of that, the entire image collapsed. That means that this foot portion is destroyed. It marks the demise of the completion, the end of Gentile times, as we'll see in verse 35. I want to see at present, we are in the feet and toes portion of that image today. On this date, 2014, we are in that foot and toe image, and very, very close to the absolute end, when there will be this total collapse of these Gentile governments. We see it happening now. You will notice that they were of iron and clay, and he broke them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold, broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. This announces the complete annihilation of these Gentile governments as they give way to the stone when Christ will set up his kingdom. They will simply be a distant memory, so to speak. Notice further that the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And that's absolutely true, that Jesus is going to establish his government. He will be King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He will reign as God, even the God of the universe, filling the whole earth for that 1,000-year period. Verse 36, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Verse 37, thou, O king, art not the King of Kings, but a King of Kings. He wants Nebuchadnezzar to know that he has been set apart as a king above all kings at that time. It didn't last as Christ's ministry and rule will reign, but Nebuchadnezzar was a King of Kings. He was above all of those on the rest of the earth. So thou art a King of Kings, and notice, the God of heaven hath given thee. He wanted Nebuchadnezzar to know, it is God who has given you this. It's not your expertise in battle and all of your strategies and because of your wisdom. God has given you this kingdom of power and strength and glory. Now we're going to see later on that Nebuchadnezzar forgot that last little fact, and God had to teach him in no uncertain terms who was God. But he did that, as we will see. Verse 38, wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, the fowls of the heaven, hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. And so specifically, Nebuchadnezzar is the head of that, and meaning that he is the head of this Babylonish kingdom. Verse 39, after thee shall rise another kingdom, and you can underline it, inferior to thee. Now this is the key to these metals. You remember that the Medo-Persia kingdom, that was the one of silver, silver being inferior to gold. Another third kingdom of brass, brass inferior then to the silver, and that would be Greece, which shall rule over all the earth. And we find that each kingdom was inferior to the one before it. And that testifies to the history of this world. Babylon started out as a tremendous kingdom, but each kingdom deteriorated till you come down to the Romans, and now we're down to the very end of that in our day, where the governments are just about to collapse. And each world empire has gone further away from the ways of the Lord. Verse 40, the fourth kingdom, that would be once again the Roman Empire, shall be as strong as iron. And that's the way it started out. For as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron breaks all these things, shall it break in pieces and bruise. The major factor or characteristic of the Roman Empire was their cruelty. It's amazing how that God waited until such a regime ruled in order to bring his son into the world, but that's exactly what he did. And thus Jesus was put to death in the most cruel, inhumane, ungodly way that there ever was, but this was God's plan. And so the Romans were in power whenever Jesus came into the world. In verse 41, whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Now, this is something that I saw a few years ago. The iron is representative of an imperial government. That is those monarchies and those that with kings, and they rule as dictators, and they really are strong governments. The part of clay is a reference to governments of democracy. Now then, we had known for quite some time that there are certain governments that are like as dictatorships. For example, England had such a government all down through the ages. So many of those countries with kings were that they passed down from father to son exactly the way that the Babylonian Empire did. And they just follow down that royal line. And there are many, many of those governments which have been around the world. And then you bring in your democracies, elected, as we say, by the people, for the people, and all of this. But a democratic form of government is really a weak form of government when you stand it up beside an imperial government. Now, what has happened, we could, years ago, studying these lessons, and those like Sister Bodie and those that wrote pointed out how you have these type of governments all in the same world. For example, we can see that today. Israel is the strongest democracy in the Middle East, but right next door you have Jordan and some of these that are still ruled by kings. So we could see that there is this mixture here in the end of our age. But what I've seen in recent years, we have this kind of mixture in the same government. Look at some of these so-called upstart democracies where they are like Egypt trying to switch over from a monarchy or the imperial government to the democratic government. And we see what chaos there has been there since the Muslim Brotherhood took over that, and then they've been ousted. And I really don't know. I haven't heard exactly what is going on in Egypt now. But what I do know is that when you have a government like that, partly part of iron and part of clay, then the king shall be partly strong and partly broken. It is a very weak and chaotic form of government. We see the same thing even here in the United States. We had a very strong democratic government, but in recent years we have seen it more where the last number of years where the executive order has been used more like a decree, and some of those have actually gone against laws that are already on the books. And yet a decree, an executive order, has overturned that. What's been the result? Look at the chaos, the confusion, the weakness. And this prevails around the world. Look at Iran. They claim to be a democratic government, but look how they try to rule their people with an iron hand. And again, what do you have? Unrest, uncertainty, weakness, falling apart. And we know from the scripture that all of these governments are going to fall apart. Now, let us understand here, as he says here, as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so shall the kingdom be partly strong and partly broken. And then he describes in verse 43 the reason for that, and we can see that in some of these countries that have had those monarchies and so forth. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves, that is the kings, with the seed of men. That would be commoners. And we have heard the big flap in England even because of that. And years ago where the man actually had to abdicate his throne because he was going to and did marry a commoner and all of this. But what I want to notice is that governments like that are going to collapse and they will give way to one world government, which will be a very strong dictatorship, is what it will amount to be, because the Antichrist will be a dictator. That's all there is to it. So these governments that are part of iron and part of clay, they are simply going to completely collapse, and all of them around the globe will give way to one world government who will eventually be the Antichrist. And as we're going to find out in our lessons, there's going to be one king after another fall in that until finally only one is left. And we will see more of that as we go on. So let's read again verse 43. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. But notice, they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. This is where we are today. And verse 44 gives us more, because there are the feet of the iron and clay. I am absolutely persuaded we are in the toe portion of this image, verse 44. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, that is to the Gentiles. I believe these kings are a reference to the 10 toes of verses 41 and 42, and they represent the last of the last days. Now, John also describes these 10 kings in Revelation 13. Well, that's a wrong reference for that. We need to get this straight because we don't want to confuse this again. The 10 toes of Daniel's vision correspond with the 10 horns in Revelation 13:1. They're the same. Now then, we also find these 10 kings I'm talking about in Revelation 17:12. And they are described there as 10 kings which have no kingdom as yet. Several years ago, I began to see and to notice the correlation here. I am persuaded, just convinced, that these 10 kings correspond to the terrorist groups that are emerging around the world, which have no king as yet. If you read Revelation 17:12, it is these 10 kings that will destroy the Catholic Church or the false church. What do we have in these terrorist groups? Jihad, holy war. They are battling, and right now they have said that they are targeting Christians. Now, I want to enlarge just a little bit on that, because the world defines Christian as Catholic. I mean, that is mainstream media, when they talk about Christian, they're talking about Catholic. We know for a fact that there are saved people in the Catholic Church. But just because you call people Christian does not actually mean they're born again. Just because they are Catholic doesn't mean they're born again. Some of them are. We know that. Some of them are filled with the power of the Holy Ghost. We know that. But when they declare war on Christians, these groups, they are in fact, in our day, declaring war on the Catholic Church. And these 10 kings, according to Revelation 17, will eventually destroy the Catholic Church. I am convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that that has already begun. And it is the jihad of these terrorist groups who form these 10 kings who have no kingdom as yet. That means they really don't have a political area that they call their own, but look at how many of them are trying to get one. The Palestinians are wanting to make Jerusalem their capital so bad. Now then ISIS gone into Iraq and Syria, they want to establish that as their haven, as their state. They all talk about having their own state, Islamic state. And so they fit so beautifully with what we read here. They fit so beautifully. Well, notice what we read here in verse 44. In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. We're talking about the days when Jesus is coming to set up his kingdom. I'm persuaded our days on this earth are numbered. I really believe they are. And so he shall set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And that's right. When that stone destroys these feet, there will be no more resistance, and he will set up his kingdom, which will last over Israel 1,000 years, but it is an eternal kingdom. And then the kingdom shall not be left to other people. That is, the times of the Gentiles are over. The other people are not going to reign anymore. But it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Verse 45, for as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. Once again, it means man has nothing to do with it. He can gather all the armaments that he wants to. He can resist all he wants to. It will do him no good. Christ is going to reign without the efforts of man. And so he is going to come forth. Man having nothing to do with it, it is supernatural, even as the advent of Jesus in this end time. It broke in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, the gold. The great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation is sure. And so he has proven that to Nebuchadnezzar by not only telling him the dream, but also the interpretation that goes along with it. Well, in verse 46, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel. Now, don't be too deceived by that, because I don't think that he is just worshipping Daniel as the man. He's worshipping Daniel as the representative of God, as we see from the next verse. He fell upon his face, he worshipped Daniel, and commanded they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is, your God is the God of gods. He was simply recognizing the God of Daniel, and Daniel is simply his representative. He actually acknowledged the Trinity here in verse 47. He answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, God is a God of gods, that is the Father, a Lord of kings, that is the Son, a revealer of secrets, that is the Holy Ghost, seeing thou couldst reveal this secret. And the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. So he advanced Daniel, as he said he would, even beyond what he probably figured on doing. But he was so impressed with what had happened here that he bestowed all this honor on Daniel. And then in verse 49, Daniel requested the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. He made them a part of his court, right along with Daniel. But you'll notice Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Now, the gate was the place where all the official business was transacted. So he was really put at the head, so to speak, of his cabinet at that time. And so Daniel was a special counselor to this king. And so indeed, God advances his own, and he puts them exactly where he wants them to be when they follow his direction, as did Daniel and these three Hebrew children. And we really have learned so much about the affairs of this world from 606 BC down to now, just from this image that and the symbolic happenings of this image, even down to our day. All right, that is our lesson for this evening. Any questions before we dismiss?